from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco plans to open supervised drug injection sites in July, becoming the first city in the country to do so. We'll discuss the controversial move with a member of the city's Safe Injection Services Task Force. Then at 9:30, the Trump administration is planning the biggest expansion in offshore oil and gas drilling in U.S. history, and environmentalists are expected to come out in force to protest hearings in Sacramento today. It's all coming up next, after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Earlier this week, the San Francisco Department of Public Health voted to approve safe injection sites in San Francisco. The facilities, expected to open in July, will offer intravenous drug users a sanitary place with hygiene supplies where they can inject drugs as well as dispose of needles. Epidemiologist Alex Krell is a member of the Safe Injection Services Task Force, and he joins us in the studio to discuss the science behind this initiative. Welcome, Alex Krell.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you, and we should say that this was a unanimous vote by the supervisors, and they will release recommendations, specific recommendations, within a few months. It doesn't appear to be a whole lot of opposition, or at least organized opposition, but we've had 30 years of legal needle exchange, and there are underground sites that have been operating for about 3 years, and this is going on in Vancouver and so forth. We have 100 cities now, I believe, throughout the world. What does the research tell us in terms of what this does?
You know, we have an extensive amount of research from Canada, from Australia, and from Europe about these sites. Basically, what they show is that they really help the people who come there in terms of reducing their likelihood for HIV, for hepatitis C, for dying if they have an overdose, other soft tissue infections that they might have, while also helping the community in the sense that it removes needles from the streets, it helps to reduce the amount of public injection that's happening in the streets and parks as well. And so it really helps the people who go there as well as the community.
And we're talking about sites that have already been named, right? Bayview and the Mission, South of Market and the Tenderloin?
Well, from the task force, the recommendations was there were recommendations for four different neighborhoods that potentially would have some of these services. That did include, I believe, the Tenderloin, South of Market, Mission, and Bayview. What I heard from the health department this week was I think they would start with perhaps two sites and maybe move on to more after that. But I don't think that they've planned yet on exactly which sites or what neighborhoods those would be in.
Well, this would be the first city in the United States. I guess Seattle has passed this, but they're having a problem finding sites. There's a kind of NIMBY effect with this, isn't there?
Yeah, we don't really know where the first site will be, and I know that's people are focusing quite a bit on that with obviously news about Philadelphia last week. And yeah, Seattle did approve these almost a year ago now, and they actually approved the funding for them, public funding for them, before the New Year's as well. The different issue here is that in Seattle, they really are looking to do sort of a one-shop place. They want a new place that does everything at that particular site. What's being proposed in San Francisco is to integrate these services into places that are already working with this population, such as, you know, needle exchanges and other places like that, rather than creating a new large place somewhere that's going to be obviously require a lot more in terms of neighborhood approval and regulations.
And there's supposed to be cost savings. Do we have actually a record of the saving in terms of these injection sites?
Yeah, we published a paper a year ago in an academic journal that basically what we did was we took the input from Vancouver, from what we've learned in terms of the research in Vancouver, and then said, okay, well, what would the costs be if we put one of those centers here in San Francisco, and what would be the savings? And what we found was that ultimately, including after considering the costs, it would save the city, even just one site, would save the city $3.5 million per year.
And again, if you've just shown Alex, I don't want to butcher your name. You prefer Krell or Krell?
Crowell.
All right, Crowell it'll be. Alex Crowell here with us in studio as principal scientist for RTI. That's the Research Triangle Institute International. They're a nonprofit research institute and a member. He is a member of the Safe Injection Services Task Force. I'm wondering about the concern. I know there will be people on site to work toward getting some of these people that are injecting into recovery. How effective has that been, or how effective do you project that's going to be? Because you need a lot of resources to get these people help, don't you?
Yeah, if we see similar kinds of results that we've seen in Canada and in Australia and Europe, what we would see is, first of all, a reduction in overdoses. And so, you know, what we need to realize here is that since 2000, there have been 500,000 Americans that have died of overdose. That is a staggering amount. And so,
excuse me, there are more overdoses, just so people know, than there are deaths by guns or cars.
Right, exactly. And so if we put that in contrast with 30 years of these sites in different places in Europe, in Canada, in Australia, there have been millions of people who've injected drugs in these sites, and not one time has someone overdosed and died. And so that's a pretty big contrast right there to what's happening in the communities in America, you know, as it is. So what we would expect to see is, obviously saving people's lives. They're also very effective at getting people into drug treatment, substance use treatment, such as, medically assisted treatment, and also counseling and helping them with basic overall health and well-being.
And there is an opioid epidemic. There are 25,000, roughly estimated, 25,500 injection users right now in San Francisco. It's about 7,500 more than there was a few years ago. Let me give you a number and welcome you to this program and this discussion. If you would like to weigh in here, we would like to hear from you. If you have thoughts or if you have questions, you can join us, and you can join us live right now, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Number to call is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, so please feel free to join the program at 866-733-6786. Again, that's toll-free. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website and posting any questions or comments you might have there at kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. I want to bring John Walters into this discussion. He's a co-director of the Hudson Center for Substance Abuse Policy Research at the Huston Institute. He's also served as director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy under President George W. Bush. And welcome, John Walters. Good to have you.
Good to be with you, Michael.
I read your editorial in USA Today, and you are against these injection sites. Why?
Well, because we know how to treat people with addiction, and I think also the so-called science here is misrepresented. Many people who use these facilities end up not using them exclusively. That's widely known. Nobody tracks the individual users, so you may resuscitate them when they're there, but they die of an overdose somewhere else because you're not treating the underlying cause. I mean, these end up being kind of self-destruction chambers, and the claim that there's robust science behind that is simply a fabrication. And to say that you're going to save lives, there's none of these cities, Vancouver included. I spoke to one of your producers who's visited Vancouver. There are people walking around with their lives wrecked who are homeless, who are on the street. This isn't solving a problem. The outreach from these chambers is not getting people into treatment. San Francisco is a wealthy city. It really can't afford to do more for treatment. It really can't afford to get the kind of opioids and now fentanyl, which is driving these overdose deaths, off the street. It really, the best we can do is to contain people so they don't embarrass the rest of the city with injection use on the street. What kind of moral stance is that?
Well, it's a strong moral stance that you take in the USA Today article. You say this shouldn't even be in the public, and it maintains the addiction, but you also say it gives the government power over addicts. What do you mean by that?
Well, what the trend has been here is the government is now going to be charged with not bringing people back to health, but to maintaining their addiction in a way that is not as deadly, allegedly. I deny that's been demonstrated, of course, but also that it's not going to be unsightly to the people in the community. So it's going to, the next step is the government's going to give them the drugs to get them to come into these centers and be better able to control their lives. That's not a democracy. That's a strange new world that is frightening and dangerous.
We've got a lot of dirty needles, though, just here in San Francisco. I mean, the numbers are staggering. Do you have some thoughts about how that can better be controlled or policed, even for that matter, than what we have now, which are escalating numbers every year, huge escalating numbers?
Well, let's be clear about it. You mentioned earlier in the interview that there have been distribution sites for clean needles. Those were presented as this is going to get needles off the street. People are going to turn in dirty needles and get clean needles. It's going to stop HIV transfer. It's going to prevent people from being as addicted because we're going to have outreach with that. Clearly, that policy has failed. Let me suggest something else, because San Francisco is known to be brave, bold, innovative, radical in its approach to problems. The problem that's causing people to die here in large numbers is the addition of fentanyl to other opioid addiction. All the evidence suggests that fentanyl is coming from China, either directly into the United States or via precursors being cooked in Mexico and shipped back in by gangs. Why doesn't San Francisco take the unprecedented step of saying, we want China to stop killing Americans. We're going to take Chinese goods that are sold in San Francisco, and we're going to charge 100% additional tax on them until China stops sending fentanyl into the United States. Let's take that money and put it into treatment and outreach. Let's put that money into better law enforcement to stop the sale of these poisons on the street. Why don't we get at the problem and not just make the self-destructiveness that is the problem less visible to people so that they feel uncomfortable? They should feel uncomfortable because people are dying. Let's do something about it.
John Walters, appreciate very much your being with us. Thank you.
Thank you.
John Walters is co-director of the Center for Substance Abuse Policy Research at the Hudson Institute and served as director of the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy under President George W. Bush. Let me go back to you, Alex Krall. There is a couple of statements that I think you probably need to respond to. One is that the science is really fabricated, but the other is that people aren't necessarily getting the help that may be designed or may be good intentions, notwithstanding.
Yeah, we're in agreement about the fact that we do need more medically assisted treatment in the U.S. The director of the National Institute of Drug Abuse, Nora Volkov, I think published a paper not so long ago that showed that, I believe she had numbers such that, that 2.5 million Americans really would need medically assisted treatment, and there's about a million slots. And so there's certainly room for a lot more medical assisted treatment out there, and that's one of the things that we need in order to solve, this very complex problem. So I think, this particular intervention we're talking about today is not going to solve all problems. It will take a lot of different ways to do that.
Let me read some comments that are coming in. Ed writes, this is a great idea, both for the money and the human lives that it will save. We should decriminalize drugs, treat addicts like patients rather than criminals, and offer treatment that will help them lead a healthy and drug-free life. Here's Enrique, who says, it seems like if you provide a safe place for drug users to inject, you will attract more drug users. What about that argument, Alex?
Having been to these sites internationally, I can assure you that nobody wants to go to these sites in terms of if you've never been using drugs, then if you were to go and see one of these sites, there's nothing attractive about wanting to go and be in the space that is. So I don't think it's going to be attracting anyone, and that's certainly what the research has shown.
Is it going to be attracting people on the streets, though? I mean, they're a few blocks away. They want to shoot up. They're going to go to the safe injection site as opposed to being in the spot that they're in?
Yeah, we asked that question and published a paper a few years ago in San Francisco asking people if they'd be willing to go to these sites or not. And 85% of the people who currently inject drugs said they would use these sites if they were close by.
All right, one more comment from Ernst, who says, I'm really excited that San Francisco is finally getting safer injection sites. It's the right thing to do. There's been a public health consensus on this issue for a long time, and it's time we started moving in the right direction. Well, you may agree or disagree. Let's hear from you, and you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. We've got a caller on here. Chris, that's you. Hi.
Hi. So this is a fabulous idea, but it doesn't address any of the decriminalization. So I was wondering how the interaction with police departments would work as the safe injection sites would go up.
Alex?
The police department was part of the 15-member task force that London Breed had last summer on this particular topic, and that was one of the concerns that was brought up at the task force. And what the police said was, well, we've been handling these sorts of issues around syringe exchange and other things as well. And so, what it really will take is making sure that law enforcement and the Department of Public Health are working hand in hand together to solve that.
You optimistic about that hand in hand work?
Yeah, I am. In fact, I mean, I am. Back when needle exchange first started and was first approved in San Francisco, it started 25 years ago, but it was approved in San Francisco about 20 years ago, and you know. In the beginning, beat cops were basically getting involved in it and arresting people close to sites and so forth. But after a few memos between the Department of Public Health and law enforcement, by and large, we don't see that happening and haven't been seeing that happening for a couple of decades now.
We're discussing the approval of safe injection sites in San Francisco with Alex Krall. He's principal scientist with RTI International and a member of the Safe Injection Services Task Force. And here is Sandra. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, my husband is an infectious disease doctor, and he's worked with the task force, and I appreciate that all the information that's coming from this task force is scientific. It's real. It's the right thing to do. It's not from politicians like the person who spoke earlier. This is for our people, for our children, so they have safe parts to go to.
All right. Sandra, thank you for that call. Good to hear from you. We want to hear right from Michael now. Michael, join us.
Hi, and thank you for having the speaker on today. I'm a recovering intravenous user myself, and I know if these services were around in Oakland and San Francisco only 5 or 6 years ago, I know two of my friends would still be with us that are no longer with us. And so it's something that we've been needed for a long time, and I'm really happy to hear that the government is finally getting around to bringing these into our local cities.
All right. I thank you. And I guess you've been getting a lot of that kind of testimony, Alex, haven't you?
You know, one of the things that's been surprising to me has been, you know, the task force was an open forum. People could come and speak to it. There were three meetings that were open. The Board of Supervisors had an open meeting, as well as the Health Commission has now had two open meetings with that. A lot of people come out have come out who's talk about the fact that they use drugs themselves and what this would mean to them, and how important a message it really sends that San Francisco cares about all its citizens and trying to do something. So yeah, the testimony has been quite powerful.
Well, when we spoke earlier with John Waters, he indicated that San Francisco's had legalized needle exchange, and it's been about 30 years now. And I'm just wondering, because the dirty needle disposal problem continues to grow. I mean, there's a syringe collection box over on Larkin Street outside of the Civic Auditorium, and about 1,500 needles in 11 days, about 1,000 syringes inside a month. I mean, these are still staggering figures. What kind of effect is this going to have, the injection sites, on that?
A couple of things. First of all, we conducted a study that compared San Francisco to Miami, and Miami doesn't have a needle exchange program. And we basically did walkthroughs, about 1,000 blocks, looking for needles in both those cities. And Miami was completely littered with needle exchange, with needles all over it, because they don't have needle exchange, right? So the needle access programs don't just hand out needles, but they also bring them back in. And so that's a key component to this. Now, in terms of the supervised consumption sites, no needle would leave there, right? And so what happens is a person comes there with their own pre-obtained drugs. They're provided a syringe to use at the site, and then once they've used it, they immediately put it in a biohazardous bucket. So that's literally taking syringes, off the streets, as it's happening right there.
This is a tough argument, but I'd like to know your thoughts about it, because I know you've given a lot of reflection in general to this and moving ahead on it. But John Walters, who we had on earlier from the Hudson Center, talks about the moral implications of having people do this sort of thing in public. I mean, where children are concerned and so forth. Your response to that?
I certainly hear that argument quite a bit. And I think that we have a staggering, huge problem right now. And we need new solutions. We need innovation. We need different ways to look at this. And in this case, it's actually not a new solution. It's only new to the U.S. And so we have a huge evidence base from abroad that shows this is successful. You know, it helps people get into drug treatment. It helps reduce death. I think that's where people are at, and that's what I hear from people in general. Is look, we need new solutions. The moral argument really is to continue doing what we've been doing, which clearly is not successful.
Well, here's Colin, who dovetails with what you just said. He writes, San Francisco should be trying this option, as all other options have failed. The comment made by John Walters regarding a municipal boycott of Chinese imports was incredibly immature and naive. Let me get some more callers on. We go to you, Pam. Pam, you're on.
Hi. I want to make a few. Thank you for asking. I have a suggestion. It's a small one, but first I'd like to say that I think one of the problems for people is that we all, you know, anybody who's not using drugs and sees a problem wants that problem to go away. And, you know, fears that setting up sites would prolong that problem. But the reality is that no drug addiction goes away overnight. It's a process that people have to go through when they're committed to getting off drugs. And to keeping the community safe in the meantime is important. The one thing I see, and I don't know what happens inside, I just can imagine that what's happening at the sites is that you're delivering services to keep the community safe and keep them safe. But what about, so the community is doing a lot to provide safety and do something for the drug users. Are the drug users engaged in the process of caring for the community? Yes, by going to the sites, yes. But I wonder if more could be done, because people are wired. We're all wired to give. We do better in life when we have a purpose and when we're giving for something that's meaningful. And I wonder if we could engage these people who are on drugs to say, you know, we want you to participate in caring for the community just as we're caring for you. You know, help us.
Pam, some thoughtful remarks. We're running against the clock here, okay, and I'd like to get a response from Alex Krell.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think we have seen and we continue every day to see instances where that is happening. For example, the naloxone, the overdose drug to get people to save people off of overdose, is something that has now been handed to people who use drugs, who then regularly save each other. For example, and that's one way they're actually empowered to be able to do something for the community. There's also testimony Tuesday at the Health Commission from somebody who said he uses drugs, and he talked himself about how he goes through the neighborhood and he picks up syringes himself.
We got seconds left here. I had a caller want to know about property value. You have any wisdom to shed on the question of property value?
In Vancouver and in Sydney, they did not show the property value decreased in areas that had these sites.
Okay. Alex Krell, good luck to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Appreciate your being with us. And Alex Krell, again, is principal scientist at RTI International and a member of the Safe Injection Services Task Force. When we return, we're going to talk about the plan to expand offshore drilling, getting a California hearing. This is President Trump's plan, and it's going to affect not only California, but the whole country. Stay tuned.